Hello and welcome to another episode of the Prop Swap Podcast. I am your host, Ian Epstein, and I am also a co-founder of Prop Swap, the first marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We've got another great episode for you. Coming up, I will be interviewing Zach Price, who is a professional bettor and betting analyst. He is also a longtime Prop Swap customer. He's been on this podcast a few times and has a lot of experience and success betting on golf, selling golf bets on Prop Swap. And he definitely specializes in the Masters, as we discuss, is just one of the best tournaments. It's the only major that stays constant at the same course. And so, he's just an expert all around when it comes to the Masters. And that's how he found out about Prop Swap the first time. But we talk about, how to analyze Augusta, betting, whether we should bet first round leaders, top five, top tens, what we should do with the fact that we've got such a huge favorite coming up here in the Masters with Scottie Scheffler, 4-1. And so it's an all Masters episode here coming up with Zach. So sit back, relax, and enjoy our interview with Zach Price. Hello, friends. We are here for a tradition like any other with Zach Price, professional bettor and sports betting analyst. He can be found at Zachonomics on Twitter, as well as his new website, ZachPrice.com. Zach, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Ian, that was a great Jim Nance you just did there. It's so great to be back on the Prop Swap Pod. A repeat guest. I feel so honored, and this is my favorite topic to talk about. So let's rock and roll.
Yeah, I think you are the leader in the clubhouse in terms of Prop Swap podcast guest appearances. So we are here to discuss the first major of the year, the best major, the one everyone looks forward to the most, the Masters coming up later this week. And so before we get into the betting side of things, I know through, just chatting with you and we may have discussed on another podcast, but you've got a long history with the Masters and specifically, golf betting. I think, you bet on a lot of sports, you provide analysis on a lot of different sports, but golf is definitely your bread and butter, right? I mean, that's the thing you spend the most time on analyzing and betting, and probably has been the most profitable sport for you over the years. Yeah.
Absolutely. Golf is my favorite to bet. It's the most profitable for me. There's so much opportunity with golf, specifically the Masters. And through the Masters is how I actually discovered Prop Swap, and I find the most value with Prop Swap, which we can, of course, get into later in the pod.
One of the things that makes this tournament unique is that it's played at the same course every year, right? The other majors will switch courses, and you're constantly having to kind of each time analyze how that course is going to fit, certain golfers. But with the Masters, it's a constant, right? And so it allows you to have a lot of data on how certain golfers have performed at this course. But when it comes to analyzing Augusta, what's your take on how this course fits certain golfers? What type of golfers does this course benefit, and what type of golfers that, may succeed, in other tournaments on the tour, but Augusta, does not fit them well.
Yeah. So, you make a great point with Augusta. It is the most correlated course year after year after year, the course history to, what ends up happening. And so I am always looking at the veterans. I'm not looking at guys who are making their first Masters appearance. And for the most part, I'm not looking at the younger stars. I'm looking at these guys who have been around the block, played in majors. They've played this course before. You mentioned the Masters is the only major. They play the same course year after year. And so it's almost like a PGA event that's been played at the same course year after year, but in a major format. And that eliminates a large percentage of the participants. And we end up with a handful of guys each year who perform well here.
So when you say in a major format, like what exactly does that mean, a major format? Just like a loaded field and, the stakes are high, or what does that mean?
You're going to get the top players in the world, obviously. You have to qualify for the Masters. You have to be invited. And so there are actually a lot of great players who are not going to be here this week. But to get here, you had to do something, be in the top 50 in the world rankings, win a previous tournament, or, of course, win a green jacket in the past among some other qualifications. But, you know, you mentioned what type of golfer will perform well. So Augusta National, built by the late Bobby Jones, he loved the ability to hit the ball right to left, hit a draw, because it's not a natural thing for golf. Ian, me and you have played on the golf course before. I don't think you have a draw. It's a tough thing to do. And so a lot of the holes require right to left shots. And so even some of these PGA Tour players aren't exactly perfectly comfortable hitting that shot. The guys that are the guys that have prepared and adapted for this week, those are going to be the guys that succeed. And if you're a lefty, you can actually hit a fade here, which has a huge advantage. And if you look back at Masters history, left-handed golfers have fared very well here.
Sure. I mean, Mike Weir, right? He's a Master champion. I can't remember another tournament he's won. Zach Johnson, Phil Mickelson. So those are just a few that come to mind. So that is a good
Bubba
point.
Watson, two-time winner.
Yeah, Bubba Watson. Yep. And the guy that just won the Texas Open, he's a lefty, right? Akshay Bhatia, right?
Excellent young player.
Yeah. So one of the interesting things that you've mentioned to me over the years in terms of analyzing the Masters and then taking advantage of it on PropSwap is, you know, looking at when people tee off and the weather, maybe, so let's say it's going to be nice in the morning, but bad in the afternoon. You're looking at guys who are teeing off early, who may get out and post a low round, but that was just maybe a weather supported thing. And then you're selling that thing, you know, middle of the first round. How do you look at, you know, let's just say weather is going to be fine. You know, how are you looking at, you know, tee times and the order of which, you know, guys are going off?
Yeah, so, you know, one thing I want to touch on, what you asked before, how is this different than a regular tournament? It's a major. So everybody starts on number one. So they're not starting on 10 and one, and the guys are all spread out. Everybody starts on one, which means some guys are going to start at 8 in the morning on that first tee time, and other guys are going to start at 2 p.m. in the afternoon. And the weather is simply different at 8 a.m. than it is at 2 p.m. The wind is different. We're going to expect some rain and wind on Thursday this week. So that's going to affect your first round leader bets. It's also going to affect if you want to jump on a guy before the tournament starts or if you want to wait to see how the tournament plays out. So weather is a huge factor, as are the tee times. So in 8 out of the last 10 Masters, the winner has come out of the late Thursday, early Friday tee time group. And so that's something to watch out for. You almost get in a rhythm, right? You play in the afternoon Thursday, grab a bite for dinner, go to bed, get up, play again. Versus the guys who maybe go out in that early morning Thursday, and then they have to come back late on Friday. That's a lot longer of just sitting around thinking about what you got to do.
Yeah. as we record this, the tee times are not available quite yet, but that will be something to keep in mind. That's interesting. So late Thursday, early Friday. So if you don't know, basically, whatever you tee off on Thursday, it's the opposite on Friday, right? So if you're late on Thursday, you're early Friday and vice versa. You mentioned betting, first round leader. I think this is definitely an interesting bet and something that probably, you know, should get more action, you know, than it does. And because we see it a lot where a guy that you would never expect to win the tournament will be leading on Thursday and ends up not winning the tournament. I mean, it is so hard to go wire to wire. And, you know, generally speaking, it's someone who is maybe not, you know, doesn't have any major wins. And so, you know, come weekend time and now all of a sudden they're teeing off with, you know, a Rory or a John Rahm, you know, late on Saturday. And yeah, they start the pressure gets to them. But, and, you know, if they're not, the no one's, the pressure's not on Thursday when they're just, you know, kind of humming along and no one's really paying that much attention to them. So you can kind of look further down the odds board, you know, to bet a guy to be the first round leader that you would perhaps never bet to win the whole tournament. Do you have any, you know, specific strategies, you know, when looking at that first round leader bet?
Yeah. So with the Masters, Thursday is traditionally a very difficult day. The men of the Masters really want to weed out that field. And so with that, they put pins in some tough places to reach where you really can't go for birdie. You got to take what the course gives you. Tiger Woods was the master of this. He would oftentimes shoot one or two under par on day one, and then again another couple under on day two before he went low on the weekend. And so these stars, the superstars, they know they don't want to shoot 75 on day one. So you almost want to fade the big guns on the first round leader and kind of go after someone who might not normally be considered to win. A guy like Justin Rose has led the Masters on Thursday four times in his career. So he's a guy I would target right away. His odds are about 110-1 to win the tournament. I haven't seen the first round leaders yet, but that would be a guy I put some money on to be a first round leader. And you know, just to back up your point, I think a wire-to-wire winner on one of the sites today, I saw a couple props up. It's about plus 700 to win wire-to-wire. It's a very, very difficult thing to do, especially in a major.
Yeah, Justin Rose currently 70-1 to be the first round leader. And again, you know, we don't know the tee times right now, but if he's, that's definitely something that if he's teeing off early, or you know, that's something you can definitely flip midday on Thursday on Prop Swap. You mentioned the course starting out more difficult and then getting easier as the as it goes along. I found this interesting. I would not suggest betting this because I don't love the odds, but on FanDuel right now, they've got odds that basically say, you know, will there be a hole in one at some point during the Masters? And the yes is minus 230. Will there be a hole in one in round four is minus 135. Will there be a hole in one on the 16th hole is minus 165. So, you know, I think if you watch enough Masters, you know that they have that traditional pin placement, you know, that Sunday pin placement on 16 that basically, you know, it funnel, if you hit in the right spot, it will funnel right down into the hole. And so, yeah, the fact that it's that will there be a hole in one on in round four is minus money, I think kind of goes to your point that, yeah, there's maybe some easier pin placements on Sunday.
Yeah, so absolutely. You know, 16, you mentioned, it's the same place every year. They've added on a couple holes this year. They've added some new plateaus, so we'll have to see how that plays out. But the par 3 12th is like one of the most traditional holes in all of golf, and that almost nobody goes for the pin there. So, you know, we're probably not going to see a hole-in-one on 12. We're probably not going to see a hole-in-one on 4. And then on 6, you can make a hole-in-one. But yeah, it's all about 16. And yes, I do think we will see a hole-in-one. The Masters love seeing those holes in ones on Sunday, getting the crowd. It surrounds the 16th green. It's just a great vibe going there. So I look forward to betting yes, hole in one on Sunday.
Okay. All right. So you will bet that. Yeah, like I said, right now, minus 135 that there will be a hole in one on any, you know, it doesn't have to be 16, but sure. I guess, yeah. And then minus 135 for Sunday, and then minus 165 at any point on the 16th hole. Before we get into some of the more specific props, you know, so you're, I consider you a sports betting analyst, a golf analyst, but also a Tiger Woods analyst, you know, the foremost Tiger Woods authority. Currently 170-1 to win the Masters, you know, and you got to imagine that that number is probably boosted, you know, from what the true odds should be because everyone loves to bet Tiger. I know you will bet Tiger, you know, no matter what, just because you want to be holding a ticket in case he is up there on Sunday. But, you know, you can never count that guy out at Augusta. I mean, I don't care if he's on one leg, you know, he knows the course, you know, like the back of his hand. But what would you, you know, are you going to be playing anything Tiger either to win or top 20 or anything like that?
So I saw a prop, will he make the cut, was minus 110. He's made 23 in a row. I think personally, I do believe as watching Tiger very closely since he was really in his teens, I think his goal this week is to make the cut. We know he wants to win every time he steps on the course. I think if he makes the cut, he'll achieve his goal. I would take yes to make the cut. Like you mentioned, I would never count this guy out if he's putting the peg into the ground on the first tee, because if he's out there, he's not going to embarrass himself. He's there to play. He's prepared for this. It's a very difficult course to walk. Can he do it four straight days? That's going to be a little tougher. But I definitely think like maybe in round one, you want to have him to have a good round. I think he'll make the cut. I did bet him to win the tournament because like, I don't think he will. But I can't, he's done so many things in golf that I never thought were possible. And so I'm going to have some pizza money on Tiger Woods to win the Masters. But I think your safe bet here is to take him to make the cut.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But yeah, like I said, you just don't want to be, you know, have him in the mix on Sunday and be like, I can't believe I'm not holding some long shot ticket on him right now.
Here's the other thing with Tiger is 170-1. If he does shoot like a 3-under on the first day, those odds will drop so fast, like you've never seen before, because the public will jump on it and the books know that you almost have to grab 170 just in case he holds out for an eagle or something. Those odds are going to plummet. I've seen it so many times with the superstar. So, you know, if you want to have some fun, put a couple of bucks on Tiger to win the Masters.
Yeah. If he's, you know, anything under par on Thursday, those odds will be like 50-1, 40-1, you know, heading into Sunday. Let's talk a little bit about top five and top 10 finishes. You know, I think it's those are interesting bets, but, you know, sometimes you look at them and you're like, the odds are kind of low for something that is harder than it sounds. And, you know, if they are in a position to finish top five, that also just could mean that they're in a position to win, you know, the tournament. And, you know, you could make more money just by selling a tournament winner ticket. So, for example, you know, John Rahm is 12-1 right now to win the tournament and plus 260 to finish top five. Let's say he's hovering around the top of the leaderboard heading into Sunday and his odds are plus 250 to win the tournament heading into Sunday. You could sell a $100 Masters winner ticket for more than a $100 plus 260 ticket, you know, top plus 260 top five finish ticket would pay. And you wouldn't even need to sweat Sunday. So, you know, I think there's some examples where it makes sense to bet the top five, top 10 finish. But if you got a guy like a John Rahm or any of these other kind of superstars, where if they are in contention for a top five, their odds are going to be more heavily weighted. You know, they're going to be a bigger favorite to win, right? Like, because, you know, if it's John Rahm versus a couple guys who've never won it, you know, he's, I don't care if he's three strokes behind, he's probably still going to be the favorite heading into Sunday. So what's your strategy on top five and top 10 finishes?
I don't bet top five, Ian. Top five is extremely difficult. We all know picking a winner is very difficult. It's a lot of fun. The golfers are trying to win the tournament. So if you have a John Rahm and he is in the top five on Sunday, he's going to try to win. And that might mean that he stands on the 15th tee, which is a par five, knowing that he has to make an eagle to win. And that hole is tons of trouble. So he might fire at the flag, go in the water and say, oh, well, at least I tried. And you can fall out of the top five so fast in golf with one bad shot. And so that's why, and you know, I'd love to talk a little bit about like the volatility of some of the holes on the back nine when we get a chance, because you will see eagles on par fives that are a three. And you will see double bogeys, which are a seven. And so it's so hard to get into the top five. I like betting guys to win, and I like betting some long shots to finish in the top 20. Because like you mentioned, the prices aren't great. The sports books hold are really high. You have those dead heat rules where you split it all when you tie.
Yeah.
So I like taking the guys, the long shots, like the real long shots, a Phil Mickelson or a Tiger, you know, a Justin Rose or an Adam Scott to finish in the top 20. If I really don't think they're going to win, but I do think they're going to play well at Augusta.
Is there anything that we should know about in terms of like, if you finish in the top, whatever, then you qualify for the next year or, you know, cause sometimes, you know, you realize that during the telecast, like, oh, like if he makes this putt, he's going to get more money. Or if he makes this putt, you know, to finish in the top five, that will, you know, qualify him for the next couple of years. And then, and so even though they know they're not going to win it, they really do want to make that, you know, that top, you know, echelon. Is there anything we should know about that?
I do believe the top 15 in ties get into the Masters again next year. So that's an important one. And then I want to say the top four get into the other majors.
Okay.
And so, but again, think about John Rahm, think about Rory McIlroy, Scheffler, you know, Dustin Johnson, all these guys. They're not thinking about getting in the next major. They're going for the win.
Yeah.
They're going for they've got the money, especially those live guys. They've got the money. They're going to be going for the win. So yeah, be careful on top fives. I was just chatting with a friend before this who had Matsuyama to finish in the top five this past weekend, and he fell out at the end. Top five is very difficult. You're almost better off, like you said, going for the win. And if your guy is top five-ish, maybe either betting on the other guys or, like you said, selling a ticket on prop swap.
Yeah. I've got another feast or famine guy coming up in stake or swap. But let's talk about the volatility of the back nine, right? I mean, we've seen it several times where guys with leads just absolutely crumble heading into the back nine. A couple famous examples, what Rory did it. Or Jordan Spieth has done it. Those are just the ones that kind of come to mind in recent memory. But, you know, yeah, what would you suggest, you know, to be looking out for on that Sunday back nine or maybe even on Saturday?
So there's the saying that the Masters doesn't begin until the second nine on Sunday. And why that is I took a look at the volatility measure of every hole at Augusta National. So the percentage of, you know, scores that go above par or below par. And what I found was the back nine has all of the volatility. So the 13th hole is a par five. It has an 8.36% volatility score. That's the highest. 15 is another par five. That's the second most volatile hole. So you have 13 and 15 where you can make a three. You can easily make a three if you hit a good drive and a good second shot. But if you miss by just a hair, you'll end up in the water on 15 or Ray's Creek on 13. And it brings seven to play. So, you know, you can see guys shoot up the leaderboard or really fall back. So the four most volatile holes are 13, 15, number 12, which is a par three, and then number 16, which is a par four. Those are the four most volatile holes. Those are four holes right next to each other. So you have all this movement on Sunday, especially where they're putting those holes in a place where you can make an eagle and you can make a seven. And you could, I would highly recommend if you want to jump in and you're not sure what to do and you're just enjoying the tournament, jump in on the second nine on Sunday to live bet the Masters. Take some long shots, because if you catch an eagle and then you catch a birdie, you are going to shoot up that leaderboard. Phil Mickelson shot up last year all the way up to second place out of nowhere.
Yeah. So, is that Amen Corner, that we're talking about here, that, those first couple holes on the back nine?
So Amen Corner is going to be 11, 12 and 13. So the 11th green, the 12th tee in the hole of the par three, and then the 13th tee is all in a little corner at the edge of Augusta National where you can actually sit and watch all those shots. And, that's where you can make a move. 11 is a very tough par four. 12 is a very tough par three, and then 13 is a relatively easy scoring par five.
And so, yeah, that brings up a good point. And I was going to ask you, you know, about jumping in, you know, during the Masters, right? Like after round one or maybe heading into the weekend. Obviously, that's a great point about, you know, looking for guys who are maybe what, like six, seven strokes back behind the leader. But they're about to head into their back nine while the leaders are still, you know, early in the front nine. You can take some shots, you know, you can, you know, take some chances on some long shots to win or jump into that top five, because, you know, like you said, the volatility of those, some of those holes on the back nine, will you jump in, you know, after Thursday's round, if someone, let's say has, like, you know, only has like, is like even, you know, after Thursday, you know, will you look to see guys who, you know, were kind of favorites pre-tournament, had an okay Thursday, and then you're like, you know what, like, you know, they're gonna regress back to the mean, meaning like they're gonna you know, shoot probably under par the following round,
right? So you know, I almost call it jockeying position. So I want to make like a small percentage of my best before the tournament, another small percentage before Friday, then I want to start betting bigger heading into Saturday, where the Masters puts the flags in good locations and players start really making a run for it. That's where you're going to see the great players start to go low. And then Sunday, of course, is when the cream rises to the top. So I actually do most of my betting Saturday morning, and then Sunday heading in about the eighth hole. The eighth hole is a par five. That's where I want to start betting into that volatility. But to your point, I am not so Rory McIlroy is a perfect example. He has finished very well. He finished second in 2022. He finished fifth in 2020. I'm just looking at the stats here. Fifth in 18, seventh in 17. But he never starts hot. So those are all backdoor top 10s. And so he's a guy I want to look for after Thursday. And if he has a pretty decent number, maybe an even par one or two under, he's a guy I'm going to bet on because he can really shoot up that leaderboard. But he's a guy I want to stay away from before the tournament because his last several rounds, I think I put him down here. Yeah. His last five rounds, last 5 years on Thursday, 72, 73, 76, 75, 73. So that's all par or worse for Rory McIlroy. And he's performed very well in terms of finishing positions. So with the superstars, again, they're not trying to go low Thursday. I'm going to wait on those guys and I'm going to bet them maybe a little bit on Friday if the number rises up, but I really want to pounce on them before their Saturday round.
That's interesting. And just one last thing on the top five, top 10 thing, because my dad used to do this and I talked him out of it. Shout out to my dad, who I know listens to this podcast. He would parlay certain guys to both finish in the top five. Because again, the odds, you know, can be kind of low. And I told him, like, those things are mutually exclusive, right? If one guy's getting in the top five, that means it's harder for the other guy in the top five. And, you know, it's those things can be mutual, you know, cancel each other out. So I would advise people to stay away from parlaying, you know, a Scottie Scheffler and a Jon Rahm to finish in the, you know, in the top five together, because if one does that, that means it's harder for the other.
I see this all the time, Ian, right? Yeah. Like my friends send me these seven leg top 20 parlays for the Masters. And it seems like, oh, all these guys are great. They're good. Every guy you slot in to be in the top 20, it actually eliminates a spot for the next guy because you need them all to be there. And the odds are not great on these parlays to actually have seven guys all be in the top 20. So maybe a round robin might be your move there, but don't parlay a bunch of guys on finishing positions. You're actually making it more difficult for every guy to place.
Correct. So speaking of Scottie Scheffler, he is 4-1 to win the Masters. That is the lowest pre-tournament favorite at the Masters since Tiger Woods in 2013, when he was plus 350. Tiger finished fourth that year. Do you remember who won it in 2013?
Yeah, I mean, Ian, you could name any year in the Masters. I'll tell you who won the Masters.
Okay.
Got one in 2013. Yep.
That is correct. So because Scottie is such a huge favorite, books are offering these markets where you can bet the Masters without Scottie Scheffler or without Jon Rahm, Rory, and Scheffler. Is it worth it to bet into these markets, or should you not be scared off by one guy and get a better number by betting against the field? I'll just give you one quick example. Right now at FanDuel, Brooks Koepka is 20-1 to win the Masters in the full field and 12-1 to win without Rahm, Rory, and Scheffler. Meanwhile, he's 11-1 or 12-1 at Caesars to win the full field. So, I mean, that goes against, like, I mean, that's the whole price shopping story, which we've talked about time again in this podcast. But, it is interesting to get Brooks Koepka 12-1, you know, and not have to worry about Scheffler, Rahm, or Rory. But what's your feeling on those markets?
So I'm going to tell you a story about last year's Masters. One of the guys I liked, and I mentioned, I don't like picking these guys to win the tournament because winning is extremely hard, but I know they're going to play well. Phil Mickelson. And they had a market, same market, winner without. So it was winner without Scott Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, and Jon Rahm. Phil Mickelson was 200-1 at a book. And I bet him. And he finished second, and I cashed my ticket at 200-1, and he never even really had a chance to win the tournament. And so I love this market. And you mentioned Koepka goes from 20 to 12, but for this market, I'm looking for guys who I actually really don't think are going to win. They're not going to close the deal. Maybe they go head to head with a Rory or a Scheffler, and you just know that they're at a disadvantage, but they're going to play really well. Can they sneak into that second spot? Louis Oosthuizen was a guy who finished second here like three or four times. He's not in this year's Masters. But I would look at some of the guys who maybe aren't, you know, major champions, guys that you don't think might not close the door, but you really like them. Joachim Niemann is a guy who I'm concerned if he can close the door. But he's a great player at Augusta, and he's hot as can be right now. That may be a good pick there. So I actually do like this market. You know, the hold is going to be pretty high. But if you do have a feeling on a guy, again, I cashed a 200-1 ticket here last year on this specific market.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure that's way higher than it would have been Phil to finish top five, right? So that's great. All right. So without further ado, I think it's time to get into some of our favorite picks coming up here in Stake or Swap. First up, we are going to be talking about Jordan Spieth. He is one of those previous Masters winners, currently 22-1 to win the Masters, plus 450 top five, plus 200 top 10. Zach, I will start with you first. Are you staking or swapping Jordan Spieth?
Jordan Spieth is a guy I will always stake at the Masters. Now, he started his Masters career with a second, a first, and a second, okay? So he has a career five top threes in the Masters, and no matter what form he's in coming to Augusta, he always seems to perform here. He came in fourth last year. So we talked a lot about top fives being difficult. This might be a guy, I think you mentioned plus 400. This might be a guy you want to bet for a top five, but I would absolutely have a ticket, and I already do, on Jordan Spieth to win the Masters.
So I hate to go against the golf expert, but I am swapping Spieth. He's someone who his performance coming into the Masters, I feel like, is very indicative of how he's going to play. Right? I was trying to find the stat I saw, but I couldn't find it again. But you know, it's not rocket science. When he's playing well heading in the Masters, he does well at the Masters. When he's not, he doesn't do well. So here are his recent finishes. At the Texas Open, he was tied for 10th. But before that, missed the cut at the Valspar, missed the cut at the Players, tied for 30th at the Arnold Palmer, and then DQ'd out of the Genesis because he signed the wrong scorecard. So I'm swapping Spieth just because his recent performances, I feel like, are not a great indicator coming in the Masters. But I do know that you do love Masters winners and obviously guys who have done well at the Masters previously, but I'm looking more at his recent tour performances. Next golfer we're going to talk about, last year's U.S. Open champion, Wyndham Clark, currently 35-1 to win, plus 650 top five, plus 280 top 10. Zach, we will start with you again first. Are you staking or swapping Wyndham Clark?
I'm definitely going to swap Clark here. So we all know the statistic that no first-time winner has won the Masters since 1979. So right off the bat, I'm not going to take Wyndham Clark to win the Masters. He also hits a fade. I remember him in the U.S. Open, the one he won, hitting a bunch of kind of like dinky fades coming down the stretch and able to make pars out of them and win the tournament. You can't hit those fades at Augusta. And so being the first time he's played at the Masters, having a fade, he's been playing some great golf lately. He almost won the Players, but I'm going to fade. I'm going to swap out of Wyndham Clark.
Once again, I'm going to go against the golf expert here, and I'm staking Wyndham Clark. To your point, yeah, he's finished second in two of his last three starts at the Arnold Palmer and the Players. He won the U.S. Open last year at the L.A. Country Club. And I looked up the yardage of that course. It's 7,423 yards. Augusta is 7,555 yards. And you compare that to TPC Scottsdale, where the waste management is, where he finished outside of the top 40. That's the yardage there is 7,261. So clearly he doesn't do well on these shorter courses, but I think he does well on some of the longer courses. And to your point, no previous master starts, but, and again, I'm just going off memory here, but I feel like there have been some guys who have done well, you know, like a Will Zalatoris, right? I mean, he did well in his first master start. He didn't win it. When Jordan Spieth won it, I guess what it was in his first master start, but pretty young, in his master's career. And I mean, look, he held on to that U.S. Open, with a couple guys, down his neck. So he clearly has, one in high pressure situations. I just feel like when it comes to Masters and not having previous starts there, like all these players have grown up watching it on TV, right? Like we all have, you kind of know, even if you haven't played that course in a tournament setting, you still kind of know that course pretty well. Look, I'm to your point, maybe not betting him to win it, but maybe, yeah, an interesting top five, you know, plus 650 at top five, or betting him in that, you know, without Scheffler, Rahm, and Rory market, I think could be interesting. Again, you're getting a major winner here. All right. And then last player we want to talk about is Brooks Koepka, currently 20-1 to win the Masters, plus 400 top five, and plus 185 top 10. I will go first. I am staking Brooks Koepka. Here are his last five major master starts. 2023 tied for second, 2022 missed the cut, 21 missed the cut, 2020 tied for seventh, and then 2019 tied for second. So he has not won the Masters, but he has finished second twice and top 10 three times, but he's also missed the cut. So this is that feast or famine I was talking about. So what I would do is I would take him to win the Masters and miss the cut, right? So I think he's currently plus 370 to miss the cut. So I would be holding a ticket on him at 20-1 to win it and plus 370 to miss the cut, because I think to your point, you know, about, you know, a guy like John Rahm kind of going for it, in the back nine, this guy just goes for it, right? He is only here to win majors and nothing else, right? So I would be betting him to win it or miss the cut. But generally speaking, the guy is just, I feel like, always up there in majors. And so I'm staking Brooks Koepka.
I'm going to stake him too, Ian. We're going to agree on this one. So Brooks Koepka is a major sniper. And those second place finishes last year, and I want to say 2019 or 2020, he finished second. Those are disappointments for him. He's won five majors, and he's never won the Masters. He led on going into Sunday last year, and he ended up uncharacteristically having a bad round on Sunday. So you can better believe if he's leading Sunday this year and you have a 20-1 ticket on him, you're feeling pretty darn good. I think we're seeing some amazing odds on Brooks Koepka, thanks to Scottie Scheffler being such low odds. Everyone else kind of rises up. And this is a guy you're going to want to back at the 20-1 mark. Like I said, he's got five majors. This is what he plays for. He was here last year at this position, and he's actually been playing great on the LIV Tour. Heading into this past weekend, he had 11 out of his last 12 rounds in the 60s. So he's in form. He's ready to rock and roll. I'm staking Brooks Koepka.
Yeah. I was shocked to see that he was 20-1. I mean, I think last year dispelled the, you know, whatever myths, rumors there were about LIV versus PGA. I was shocked to see him, you know, such high odds, and, you know, and shocked to see like Xander Schauffele has lower odds than him. You know, I mean, Xander hasn't won a major, and I know he does well at the Masters, but like you said, he is, Brooks is a major sniper, and that Masters is the one thing that he really, really wants to win and hasn't won yet. So I would be, to your point, I'd be feeling really confident if I was holding a 20-1 ticket and he was at the top of the leaderboard heading into Sunday. So that will do it. Thank you so much, Zach, for joining us this week and giving us all of your master's expertise. Once again, he is at Zachonomics on Twitter or X, and also just launched his new website, ZachPrice.com. Go check it out. All of his articles and videos of analysis on there. Zach, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome, Ian. I want to say just one last tip for the golf bettors out there. Hole number two is an easy par five. Don't go crazy when you see guys birding it and then jump on them live. I've seen it too many times. Hole three is a tough hole. They're going to come back. So hole two, you're going to see a lot of birdies. Just settle down, watch the rest of the tournament, wait till the guys get to the back nine. Thanks again, Ian, for having me on.
There you have it. All right. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this week's episode. Please make sure to subscribe, leave a rating, and we will talk to you next week.